Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program. It's February 26, 2019, which in our calendar is the 21st of Adar 1, 5779. I am Walter Bingham. Although Israel's general election is not until April the 9th this year, the media is generating a good measure of election fever. So in today's program, you will hear the leaders of two political parties discussing their policies and reasons why they formed new parties. There will also be some other interesting items. But I begin with a report from the annual leadership meeting of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Last week saw the 45th Conference of the President's Leadership Mission to Israel. They are America's central coordinating umbrella organization comprising of 53 major Jewish organizations, led by their new president Arthur Stark and CEO Malcolm Hoenlein. They meet in Jerusalem once a year to hear from Israel's top elected leaders and strategic thinkers to get a deeper understanding of Israel's concerns, both domestic and external. This is particularly important at this time when Israel is leading up to a general election and antisemitism in all its forms is on the rise in the US and Europe, creating new challenges for the relations between diaspora Jewry and Israel. The five-day meeting began with a press briefing, and here are some edited highlights.
I'm Jono Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind.
Every Thursday.
Here is Walter Bingham.
I'm Malcolm Hoenlein, the CEO of the Conference of Presidents, and I'm pleased to introduce to you, for the first time in this capacity, the chairman of the Conference of Presidents, Arthur Stark, who was renowned for his leadership of the Friends of the IDF, where he served in two different sequences as president, and as you know, one of the most successful operations in the United States in terms of fundraising and the messaging that it engages in, and Arthur has served already with distinction since June as the chairman of the conference.
Thank you, Malcolm. We just came back from Africa with a delegation. Each year we select a strategic location to visit. We selected Africa as emerging nations with close strategic ties with Israel, and everybody came away with a strong sense of the respect given to not only America but to Israel there. There's a high sense of appreciation for the many years of work to help build the society there and bring Israeli know-how, as well as to bring Africans from these countries, Uganda and Kenya, back here to Israel for training. We met with top leaders in both countries. We shared ideas regarding the political environment, diplomatic relations, security, the fight against terrorism. And then we also met with business leaders to discuss opportunities. Since our members of the Conference of Presidents are business people who have connections in America and here on many different business fronts, and felt like it was a very strategic and important visit, reinforcing and building the ties between Israel and Africa, between the U.S. and Africa, and the trilateral relation in general. We also met with the Jewish community when we were there. So all in all, it was a very exciting and purposeful trip. And it was also a very important statement, because following the Nairobi attacks, it was very important to show our solidarity and stand together with emerging democracies and to show our unity as a Jewish community. And it was greatly appreciated. They recognized it. They brought up the point. We didn't have to say it to them. They said it to us, how much they appreciated us coming under those circumstances. Now we're here in Israel. Each of the members that come here get a better understanding of what's happening on the Israeli scene and can take back to the U.S. with them that understanding and better prosecuting the work that they do on behalf of the Jewish community, on behalf of the relationship with the State of Israel.
We see Africa as a new frontier. The countries we visited are on the front line of this. And what they need is what Israel has to offer. And we heard that repeatedly at every level, from agriculture, science, technology. They all look to Israel. We try to promote the trilateral relationship of U.S., Israel, and these countries, because through that, I think we can benefit each of the countries. One of the issues that we raised, of course, was the UN voting record. And in one case, one of the leaders turned to their UN ambassador who was with us and said, from now on, you clear the votes with me. When I explained to him what UNESCO had done, I will say that the president of Uganda, in the meeting with us, gave us a lecture about why Jews belong in Israel, why they have a right to Israel, and how he told the Iranian leaders that it was nonsensical for them to say that Jews don't belong here. We met the scores of the top business leaders. We, of course, the prime ministers and others in each country, and we had invitations from several other African countries. They all value the visits of the prime minister very much and saw that as an important statement and looked to fulfillment of some things that they had discussed with him. And we hope that we can do more countries and expand the relationship with Africa. We have worked hard for many years developing the relationship over time, and it results in the kind of connections that this trip reflected. We live in an era of divisiveness and polarization in the United States as well as we see in a more extreme form in Europe. It's a time when our unity is more important than ever and coming together. But we should also note that while attention is given to a few extremists who express anti-Israel and even anti-Semitic points of view and who must be held to account, and that there must be a policy of zero tolerance for it, whether it's in the Congress or in state legislatures or public officials or public personality. The fact is that the Congress of the United States voted 424-0 to support a statement that said that it is the national security interest of the United States to fight BDS, to stand with Israel, trade with Israel, and to reinforce what some 24 states have already enacted. That is the real message of where the American people are, not these extremist voices. We are working hard with the Democratic Party. We've had many meetings. We've met with the trade union leaders. We've met with ethnic leaders. And we're finding support. Two-thirds of the American people support Israel. Overwhelmingly, the Congress and certainly the administration support the U.S.-Israel relationship. We have a lot of work to do, and we have to do it together. And part of what we come here for is to get the arms, the weapons that we can use when we go back to advocate for Israel, to be informed, to be educated, to be articulate about the case. And of course, we face the ongoing challenge of Iran and the role that it is playing in other countries. We saw it in Africa, where concern was expressed about Iranian interference in Somalia, the extremism and terrorism that is in evidence there. I think that the community is united in fighting against these expressions of extremism. I think the members of Congress, if you've seen the Democratic leadership, President Trump in his State of the Union, these are very strong declarations. And we hope that it will set the tone for what the administrative bodies in fighting anti-Semitism, the appointment of a special envoy who will be speaking to the conference, Ilan Carr. These are all very positive statements. Unfortunately, the media only focuses on the negative. The American people reject anti-Semitism. It's increasing sharply. It's not quite France and Germany, but we see it, and we need to fight against it. We are doing internally in the community. We work with law enforcement. We work with our federal and state governments who are opposed to it and want to help. So we hope that we will leave here better informed and be able to be more effective in our work back home.
We read quite a bit about the disagreements between the diaspora Jewry, the American Jewry, and Israel. Can you tell us something about that?
I think that the nature in the media in the U.S. is to try to, and possibly here too, to try to pull on those threads to try to find where those disagreements are. And they do exist, but the reality is that when it comes down to the most important issues, I think we can find unity among people. And when the going gets difficult, we're able to pull them together.
That's not enough.
We have a lot of work to do on our campuses. We already see our young people being influenced by leftist extremists being intimidated. So we are doing a number of things. One is to protect the rights of our students. We have lawyers. We have people going onto the campus. We are filing lawsuits against administrations that do not allow pro-Israel speakers, that discriminate against Jewish students. We also have to see to it that there's better education for children starting in elementary schools, that you can't just take a kid at 18 and send him to Israel for 10 days and think that they're going to be armed to face the challenges they meet on campus. We have to do better pro-Israel education, better Jewish education at all ages, and I think the community is increasingly aware of it, and there are a lot of programs now that are being implemented or introduced that will hopefully try to address it. So there's two parts. One is the positive, which I think is the more important, of arming, educating our kids to have a greater appreciation of Israel, to understand, show them all the great new discoveries being made all over Israel, every one of which reinforces the Jewish claim and Jewish presence in this land and the historical association, to make sure that the people who represent Israel are sensitive to the way their words are received in the West, that sometimes you say things here in the internal political dialogue, but unfortunately everything gets megaphoned in the United States. Sometimes it leads to a lot of misunderstanding, and then young people can feel disaffected from a particular message.
What about General Aliyah? Did Pittsburgh encourage any Aliyah?
I don't think Aliyah should come because of negative reasons. I think Aliyah should come for positive reasons. I think Israel has so much to offer and great things. I think Pittsburgh was a wake-up call for American Jewry. It was the end of the age of innocence for American Jewry. No one can say they didn't know anymore. Everybody knows, and the fact that it occurred at the time of Kristallnacht, the 80th anniversary, which was the end of the age of denial for German citizens, because they couldn't say anymore that they weren't aware of it. Everybody knew what was going on after that. Everybody knows after Pittsburgh, and we see the change. And I think the reaction, Arthur and I were in Pittsburgh the next day, and it was amazing to see the response of people, children, others coming, laying flowers, crying. I have never seen any response like that. The president came later, but the governor and the mayor, there were thousands of people standing in the rain to get in, because every seat inside, every color, every religion, every race was inside that room. So I think it was a wake-up call. But, you know, after time, it dissipates. So we are working very much to improve the security in our communities. And the federal government gives us some assistance, but the community itself, we have to do much more to protect our institutions, our communities. But a society is not judged because they have haters. They're judged by how they deal with the haters. And one has to say, America passed the test on Pittsburgh. It was hundreds and hundreds of events around the country, many places where there were no Jews. The responses that touched everybody in a unique way, somehow it caught the hearts and minds of the American people.
I think I would add to that that the Israeli government responded by sending Minister Bennett and give a message of resilience to the people of Pittsburgh. But I think what he found there, you saw rabbis and other leaders of the community standing up with an Israeli level of resilience, imams even, and they said, we're not going to be pushed.
The program included speakers on a variety of subjects, as well as panel discussions on current events, BDS, Israel, the Startup Nation, and entrepreneurship. The chairman of the Jewish Agency for Israel, former chairman of the Labour Party and leader of the opposition, Israel Herzog, began by talking about antisemitism. He also had some advice for diaspora Jewry and for a cooperation with Israel.
In recent months, we've seen data, facts, and events which should bother all of us substantially, of a phenomena which we are seeing all over the world. I don't think Pittsburgh is a standalone, and I don't think other events are standalone. It's a collection of events which are also proven in data. In a CNN poll of 7,000 people in Europe a few weeks ago, more than 50% blamed the situation of the Jews on the Jews. 30% claimed that the Jews in Europe, that they don't know anything about the Holocaust. And most importantly, we've seen a sharp rise of anti-Semitic events both in France and Germany. We see what's going on within the Labour Party in England. And the phenomena is there. We have a cocktail of anti-Semite throughout the ages, based on religion or other reasons of hate.
Better sound after the break.
Hi, everyone. This is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Based on religion or other reasons of hate, extremists from the extreme right and the extreme left use anti-Semitism as a political tool that serves their political needs, plus a culture of hate which emanates from social media, which is a hotbed for all of the lunatics of the world, and together creates a platform of the haters together. And the platform of the haters together is a very dangerous platform, which requires us both to act defensively and proactively. Defensively is to increase the security of Jewish institutions and the like. Of course, to work with security services and police. And proactively working on education, on coordination between governments. I've said recently in the European Parliament commemorating Holocaust Memorial Day, that in terms of anti-Semitism, we live in one of the more darker eras of modern times, of the last generation in Europe. So I stand here as the chairman of the executive of the Jewish Agency and say we have to fight it together. This requires compelling governments and legislatures to increase the education against anti-Semitism, Holocaust memorial lessons, and the like throughout the world, especially in Europe, as well as legislating the wide definition of anti-Semitism as accepted by the European Union, where there are still states who are debating it and not willing to accept it. And that includes, of course, reference to the state of Israel as well. So this is a campaign which we should all work on together. And I call upon all parties concerned, including the government of Israel and other governments, to join hands together in fighting anti-Semitism in the fiercest way. But I'm telling you outright that this issue has not been discussed in depth in the Israeli public life, and this is part of the problem, because I'm trying my best to convince Israelis not to be indifferent to the plight of the diaspora, the story of the diaspora, the connection with the diaspora, the connection of the diaspora to Israel, and of course what I call Jerusalem and Babylon, the great dialogue which should take place, especially between 6 million Jews in Israel and 6 million Jews in North America.
Although the general election in Israel is not until April the 9th this year, election fever is already in the air, and the smaller parties, as well as the new ones on the scene, are assessing their chances of reaching the threshold of 3.25% of the votes in order to qualify for the minimum of 3 Knesset seats. So negotiations are in progress between aspirants to combine their startup parties. One group, which seems assured of a number of seats to rival that of Netanyahu's Likud party, is the new blue and white superbloc comprising of Yair Lapid's Yesh Atid party, 3 former lieutenant generals and chiefs of staff of the IDF, Gabi Ashkenazi, Moshe Bogi Yaalon, head of the new Telem party, a Hebrew acronym for National Statesmanlike Movement, and the former Minister of Defense, and Benny Gantz with his Israel Resilience Party. The merger, which looks successful mainly because of the unexplained popularity of Benny Gantz, would place him as Prime Minister, probably alternating with Yair Lapid. Before this merger was announced, General Yaalon said this when asked in the course of an interview for the reason of his decision to run with Benny Gantz.
I decided to go to politics after my retirement from the IDF, because I felt at that time that I have many reservations regarding the way that the State of Israel was led regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I had many observations regarding the conflict. I would say rational observations, pragmatic observations, and I felt I had to go to politics in order to turn the way regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And 7 years in politics, serving as a vice prime minister, minister for strategic affairs, and then the defense minister, I'm very proud of this period of time in which we succeeded in stabilizing the security situation of our country. And my main considerations regarding our security are interests, rather than wishful thinking, delusionary ideas regarding the relationship with our neighboring countries, based on interests, concentrating on Iran as the main threat. But to the end of my term as defense minister, I felt like I have many reservations regarding the internal issue in our country. Politicians who generate the split between Jews and Arabs, right and left, Ashkenazi and Sephardi, religious, non-religious, ultra-Orthodox, and so forth. And because of certain problems, let's call it corruption at that time, I decided to resign. And from the very beginning, in my resignation speech, I said, I'm going to run to our national leadership because I do care about our country. The main challenges today are not external, are internal. And from the very beginning, I realized that I have to create my own party because when it comes to security, I'm hawkish. But when it comes to Jewish and democratic values, I had many reservations regarding the way that our political leadership led the country. And from the very beginning, I said, well, we will know the time of the elections. I will come out with my party. But I call for cooperation. And here I found Benny Gantz as a good partner with understanding about what I believe our main challenges. Why I was ready to be the second. So I understood, I put my ego outside of the room in order to be able to lead the country on the right way. And that's why Benny Gantz is my good partner to go together to the coming election.
To the question of whether Israel should be a Jewish or democratic state, he said,
it is a shallow dispute, because if you ask myself who I am, first of all, I'm Jewish, then Zionist, then Israeli. But regarding Judaism, it is a religion, its peoplehood, its nationality, and a civilization of values. And I had a couple of disputes. The well-known incident of the soldier in Hebron.
He refers to Elo Azaria, who shot at the terrorists while he was on the ground, believing that he was still a danger, hiding explosives under his heavy coat on a hot day.
Which violated Jewish values as well as the law. So I found myself defending the IDF, Israel Defense Forces, values, but it became a political dispute. We sanctify human lives, first of all, in Judaism. Of course, when a car comes to kill you, rise up and kill him first. If that was not the case. When it comes to democratic values, it is not contradictory to Judaism. It is to be tolerant, to keep checks and balances in democracy. The rule of law is above all of us, to include prime minister, president, whoever. And in this regard, I don't see contradictory. In our case, if Israel will not be Jewish, it will not be democracy. And we can see other countries around us, which are not Jewish, no way to make from them democracy. Israel is a vibrant democracy. And in one hand, we are shameful of having prime ministers investigated because of criminal allegations. Not the first, this is the third. One of them was imprisoned. We can't be proud of it, but we can be proud of our judicial system, which so far are independent. I'm saying so far because today they are under offensive. The Supreme Court, the police commissioner, former one, the attorney general, the media, the civil servants, the chief general staff in this case, the head of the ISA, Shabak. Democracy is not just the rule of the majority, it's checks and balances. So those checks and balances today are under offensive. That's part of what we claim should be on the agenda in the elections campaign, in order to change the route of our country and to bring it back to the right direction regarding keeping Jewish and democracy.
Asked why Netanyahu is still so popular, he explained,
"The Israeli people enjoy a relatively calm situation security-wise. I'm ready to take part of the responsibility. There is potential threat."
"There's no existential threat," he said.
"We managed to stabilize the situation in the north, on the border with Lebanon, Syria, with a very sophisticated but very responsible policy, strategy, managing to improve the relationship with our neighboring Arab countries because of interest. And even in Gaza, we succeeded, at least until last April, to stabilize the situation after a protective edge operation. In the last 10 months, we have problems. I'm quite critical to the way that we manage the situation over there, but nevertheless, let's put it aside. From the economic point of view, we enjoy a prosperous economy. So that's part of the explanation. Unfortunately, part of the people believe that all the issue of criminal allegations, it's conspiracy. They really believe in it. Unbelievable that they believe in it. To believe that all the elements from the police, attorney general, the media are trying by conspiracy to get rid of Netanyahu, there are those who still believe in it. And the way that the situation is manipulated in order to share this victimhood position is well-rooted in certain circles in Israel.
On Iran, he said,
"And we should be ready, by one way or another, to stop the military nuclear project in Iran. The very good idea was to sanction Iran, first of all, because the violation of UN Security Council resolution regarding proliferation of arms and terror. Then they should be sanctioned because of the missile project. Those elements were ignored by President Obama. And the third reason, human rights. This regime executes dissidents on a daily basis. So we have at least three reasons to sanction this regime."
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
Here is Walter Bingham.
On Iran, he said,
"And we should be ready, by one way or another, to stop the military nuclear project in Iran. The very good idea was to sanction Iran, first of all, because of the violation of UN Security Council resolution regarding proliferation of arms and terror. Then they should be sanctioned because of the missile project. Those elements were ignored by President Obama. And the third reason, human rights. This regime executes dissidents on a daily basis. So we have at least three reasons to sanction this regime. Even not to deal with the deal. And that was my recommendation, you know, to keep Europe on your side, on board, and not to have this rift between and split between the United States and Europe. Nevertheless, I believe that if Khamenei meets again the dilemma whether to go on with his drug activities or to survive as a regime, his choice for sure will be survive.
Survive, and Yaalon gave several convincing examples. Speaking about Israel's warm relations with the Gulf states, he stressed that it's not a legal agreement but based on interest to counter the threat from Iran. When I pointed out that interests are transient and frequently change and asked how he sees the situation when the Iran problem will be solved and probably everything will again revert to the Palestinian-Israel conflict, he replied that then our strategy will also have to change. He was firm in his belief that the American withdrawal from Syria and abandoning the Turks is a mistake, and that the void might allow Iran to establish a land bridge to Syria and the Mediterranean. But he said,
I am very optimistic about the future of the Jewish state, the state of Israel.
Habayit HaYehudi, the Jewish Home Party, was considered to be the natural choice for, among others, the modern Orthodox voter and for the so-called settler community. However, in recent months, their direction narrowed to the more extreme right. It was therefore that its founder and CEO, Naftali Bennett, who is Minister of Education and Diaspora Matters, left to form another, more inclusive party, the New Right Party, together with Ayelet Shaked, the Minister of Justice, and several others, including the well-known and well-loved journalist Caroline Glick, who joined their new party, and from whom we shall hear in next week's program. Here is Naftali Bennett, commenting first on the Polish debacle.
You cannot build a joint future based on erasing the history. And our history with the Polish nation is a long one, fraught with ups and downs, but the reality is that, unfortunately, during the Holocaust, prior to the Holocaust, and after the Shoah, many Poles did participate in active anti-Semitism and indeed murdering Jews. There were Poles who were different, went out of their way to save Jews and the righteous Gentiles. But the reality is that, on the one hand, the Polish nation itself was a victim of Nazi Germany under severe and harsh occupation. I believe it one of the only places where the government was dissolved. There was no active Polish government during the Shoah, during World War II. So they are a victim, but also many Poles were involved in anti-Semitism. I want to point out one personal story. My wife's grandfather, Eli Rodzinek, Jewish Pole boy, his father was taken away. For about 4 years, he hid his mother and two brothers in the forest. He had blue eyes, etc. So he went out to work, earn food, and bring it back to their hiding place in the forest, and every month or so moved to that hiding place. After about 4 years of this, when the Russians were already almost there, one day he was walking back to the hiding place for his mom and brothers, and a bunch of Polish teenagers came laughing and said, "We killed your family." He ran to the hiding place and he found his mom and two brothers murdered by these Polish teenagers. That's a fact. And my children are descendants of Eli Rodzinek. So that's the reality. I think that Poland today is and will be a friend of Israel, but we can't build a future based on erasing the past.
Referring to Netanyahu's statement that caused such problems, Bennett said,
I think that statement content, part of it was factually wrong. This was an official joint statement of the government of Israel, which is why I came out very harshly about that statement. We deeply value the current friendship with the Polish government and people. That's a reality of 2019. But certainly not the Jewish people. We cannot in any way allow anyone to revise history for the sake of future. That's not the way to build a good relationship. And I believe that by facing the full reality of what happened in Poland, that they were a victim, but they also, some of them, and not a small number, were involved actively or passively in anti-Semitism. That's also a fact. And I think, therefore, that the joint statement, because it had wrong facts there, it was wrong to do.
We're experiencing a sharp rise in anti-Semitism, not only in Europe, but also in the United States and elsewhere. What can Israel do?
First of all, I agree anti-Semitism is on the rise on the left in the United States, but we also saw it happen on the extreme right in the United States. is a growing legitimacy, openly express anti-Semitism. This congresswoman is an anti-Semite, loud and clear. But I'll say this, I think the single factor which can influence anti-Semitism or decrease in anti-Semitism is the strength of the state of Israel. I think the stronger Israel is, the more protected every Jew in the world is, regardless of their specific relationship with Israel. Because it's a whole different ballgame when there's a small and feeble, or even prior to the existence of Israel, where there's no solid core. Now that Israel is growing and becoming stronger by the day, every Jew should know Israel's there for him. Not in the sense, all right, I'm going to make Aliyah tomorrow, but in the sense is we have your back. And it reflects not only on the Jews, but also on those who come in contact with the Jews, knowing that Israel is strong. You know, I'm done with trying to be liked. We're not in the business of trying to be beloved. We're in the business of being strong, being right, being moral, but being strong. I prefer to have a strong Israel and strong Jewish diaspora than to have the sympathy of the world with a feeble Israel or feeble diaspora. I'm not looking for sympathy. Israel is becoming strong, and that, more than anything, will protect the Jews of the world.
Concerning the effect of our government's close relationship with President Trump on the mostly liberal American Jewry and their possible alienation from Israel, Naftali Bennett commented,
I am worried about the future of the relationship between American Jews, and even the vast majority of American Jews are more to the liberal left side. The vast majority of Israelis are to the more conservative right side. That's okay. What's not okay is that there is a chasm that's growing. I'm Minister of Diaspora Affairs. I'm Minister of the Jews. And as Minister of the Jews, I'm profoundly worried about it. I'll tell you what you don't do. What you don't do is you don't change your principles in order to solve disconnect. What you do is engage in dialogue and remember that we're family, even if we disagree. As Minister of the Jews, what I'm doing is unprecedented amount of projects where we're bringing American Jews to Israel, Israelis to abroad. I've brought about 200 of the opinion leaders in Israel to American communities of all the streams. It turns out that Israelis know almost nothing about American Jews. And these opinion leaders come back to Israel with eyes open, and we learn a lot. And that's the second thing. This dialogue has to involve not only mouth, but also ears. To actually create a dialogue, to listen, to hear. I can tell you that I've learned a great deal from American Jewry, much of which I'd want to import into Israel. The key element is respect, and respecting that there's a spectrum of different opinions, whereas in Israel, everyone's categorized. You're secular, you're religious, you've got a black yarmulke, you've got a knitted yarmulke. We're all in categories. In America, you're a Jew. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, I founded the party, is to bring together all Jews, secular, religious, Haredi, traditional.
Back to politics.
It's not every day that you found a new party. So, hey, I founded a new party. Hayamin HaChadash, it's right wing, very clear right wing. I believe that our opinions of not giving up land of Israel, and let me be clear, I oppose handing over 1 centimeter of the land of Israel to the Arab. Our right is not defined by hating anyone else, hating the left, hating Arabs. We don't hate anyone. I respect every citizen of Israel. As Minister of Education, I worked very hard to provide opportunity for Christians, for Muslims, for Druze, for Haredim, for secular, and you won't find me ever attacking Arabs because I don't have that in me. I don't have any hate. Sometimes people define themselves by hating the other side. I'm not in that game. I have clear principles, but it's about principles, not about creating strife. So I believe that, on the one hand, to be a very clear right wing, however, to unite Israel, not by blurring our disagreements, by embracing them and by respecting each other. We're one family, and that's the bottom line. Israel's one family. The Jews are one family. We have to get along while disagreeing. Factually, Bibi's the next prime minister, whichever way you want to slice and dice. There's no real action about who's going to be the prime minister. The big question is who's going to be the key partner and what's going to be the nature of the next government. Is it going to be Bibi Gantz or Bibi Bennett? That's ultimately what the whole election's about. Is it going to be a center-left or center-right? We've seen two versions. In 2009, Bibi called in Ehud Barak as his key partner. Netanyahu announced a Palestinian state, released 1,000 prisoners, froze building Judea and Samaria, etc. In 2013, he brought in Justice Minister Tzipi Livni, who was an unmitigated disaster as Justice Minister, according to my opinions, of course. She was very pro-judicial action and activism, you know, where the judicial system get way too involved in running the country. And then we came about. And when we came about, it's sort of like a tug of war. We pull to the right. Whoever's the current left-wing partner pulls to the left, and whoever's stronger wins. That's how I effectively stopped the release of prisoners by this tug of war. I told Netanyahu in 2014, if you release any more Israeli Arab murderers who are in prison, I'll leave the government. And from then on, we've not released one terrorist, one murderer. From the time I am governed, we've not given up one centimeter of land of Israel. So it matters. Who's stronger matters. Benny Gantz, he's a good guy. He's a mensch. He's Zionist. He's left-wing. He shouldn't be ashamed of it. And this whole game of facade that he's not exactly left. He's got someone who went to a J Street conference and talked about the occupation and that we have to remove hundreds of thousands of Jews. And then he's got someone who wants to annex Judea and Samaria. It's a schizophrenic party. They have to decide. It's a two-headed party that doesn't make sense.
About Trump's deal of the century, he said,
the plan, to the best of my understanding, is that in the period after elections prior to forming the government, the Trump administration is going to lay down a plan for a Palestinian state. They waited for after the elections, I think, to make it all easier. And I'm worried about it. Trump is a huge friend to Israel. However, at the end of the day, I'm looking after Israel's interest and not Trump. And let me be very clear. The Yamin HaChadash party will not join a government that is predicated on the principle of forming a Palestinian state west of the Jordan. We will not join. And if, God forbid, it goes towards that, we will do everything in our power to stop that, because I think it would destroy the future of Israel. It will destroy the future of my children. This ain't theory. And this is millions of kids in Israel, and I'm looking out for their future. I understand that those who seek that may view me as an impediment, as a barrier. You know what? They're right. I am a barrier. And if I'm strong enough, I'll be strong enough to stop that disaster. I want to point out something that no one's almost ever spoken about. Putting security aside, let's say we form a Palestinian state in the West Bank. Let's say it's demilitarized. There's one point that everyone neglects. Once there's a sovereign state, that state in Judea and Samaria can obviously allow anyone it wants inside its own state. That's what a state means. They control their barriers, the customs, if you will. Folks, there's about 8 million descendants of 1948 refugees in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan, all around the world. Let's say just 3 million of them say, all right, we're going to our state, not to Tel Aviv, we're going to that Palestinian state. So in one fell swoop, the demographic advantage that Israel has achieved over the past 140 years of Zionism will be wiped out in one fell swoop. Now imagine that there's a clear majority of Arabs between the Jordan and the Mediterranean. And now, if I were their campaign guy, I would put them all on the green line with signs, we want home, we want home. Back in Haifa and Yafo and Jerusalem. And after a few weeks, I can promise you that that congresswoman will say, you know, they're right. And in Europe, they'll say, you know, they're right. And then when we'll want to undo this, it's irreversible. What are you going to do? There is no undo button in reality. Once you inject millions of Palestinians west of the Jordan River, it's irreversible. That's why I'm very clear here. We can achieve peace, and I want peace, believe me, more than anyone. I lost my best friend in battle. I served in every battle since the 90s, in the First Intifada, Second Intifada, Protective Edge, Iron Wall, Second Lebanon War, you name it. I lost my friends. We want peace. There's one way to achieve peace, and it's for our enemies to realize that Israel is here to stay forever.
Here is a question from the floor.
If Netanyahu, though, does decide to bring in Gantz and asks you to come in as well, is that a government that you would join?
No, I won't rule out anything, but it reminds me of the current government and the previous government where there's going to be a tug of war between Gantz pulling to the left and me pulling to the right. I can say that Prime Minister Netanyahu, time and again, has always first turned to the left. Typically, before the elections, Netanyahu scours Judea and Samaria, goes to settlements, visits, talks, and all that. The day after, no one's calling. The National Zionist Orthodox group, which I led until now, it's always the last because he sort of takes them for granted. That's why we need to be very strong. We're shooting for 15 seats in the next Knesset to be the central party in the next government of Netanyahu. And I want to point out that Ayelet Shaked is a remarkable person and a remarkable minister. And I personally think she's the single most effective minister in the current government. She's been effecting unprecedented counter-revolution of judicial activism that we've seen over the past 40 years. Our point is that we want judges to judge and government to govern. What's happened over the past 40 years is judges and all kinds of lawyers have been running the country, and we're reversing that. We need 4 more years of Ayelet Shaked. If you want Ayelet Shaked for another 4 years, if you want a defense policy which will finally be strong and tough, then you definitely need to vote for Hayamin Ahadah.
That's the New Right Party. I have to end here. So thank you for listening. I hope to be back again next week with more from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world. You will also hear from the well-known and much-followed writer Caroline Glick telling why she joined Naftali Bennett's New Right Party. That's one you don't want to miss. Until then, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a good week, and please also make it one for your elderly neighbor. Goodbye.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.